Where's the rub? Where's the rub? There it is. It's right there.
We solve the mystery of
episode
the rub.
Done. Goodbye.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Hello, goodbye. Great song.
Great band.
Who is that? The Monkees, right?
Yeah.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. Welcome to Gilmore, guys.
I'm Dimmy.
I'm Kevin. And
we're
the Gilmore guys. Such coordination.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Now, what I wanted to get into before we actually start the episode discussion is a lot of you out there, and I know we've talked about it before, but a lot of you out there have been asking for our origin story. Kevin, Dimmy, how'd you meet? Just like Paul and John, how did they meet?
Right.
You know, in Liverpool. So we wanted to get into that, and I've actually prepared a special audio presentation of our very first interaction together. Let me set the scene.
Wait, what do you mean our interaction? Was there a recording of?
Yeah, well, it's Doug Loves Movies.
Right, but it's not our interaction. It's just we happen
to be. Well, you can hear us interact, though.
Oh.
Well, I wonder if you remember this at all. So here's what it was. Doug Loves Movies. This is like 2 years ago. The panel is Gillian Jacobs, Adam Pally from Happy Endings and The Mini Project, and Paul F. Tompkins doing Werner Herzog.
It was really Werner Herzog.
Oh, I'm sorry. Werner Herzog as Werner Herzog. And so this is a part of the show where in Doug Loves Movies, they play for different audience members. So they're going out and getting the tags, and Gillian gets Demi's tag, and this is the conversation that happens. And in the recording, you can hear me at the sound of Demi's name. At the time, we were not friends, we were not even acquaintances, but I knew of him, and I knew him on Vine and Twitter, so I let out a woo, and then...
Oh, I remember now.
And then this happened, so we'll just play this real quick.
Gillian, what did you come up with?
Well, I picked a gentleman that I have met before, and I know him by his online name, which is easier to pronounce, which is Electro Lemon. Yeah. But his real name...
This is a real Electro Lemon crowd.
Yeah. His real name I cannot pronounce, so here goes nothing. Aluwade Emalade O Adejuyi Igbo.
Almost, man.
How did I do?
You said great.
I did it.
Is the last part of it really Igbo? It did you weebe.
Fuck
Come
me.
On.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. I told you I would mangle it, but Electro Lemon, I like to call him.
All right. So that's who we say you're playing for is Electro Lemon.
To be fair, this name written out looks like an alphabet and a half. It rather resembles a field sobriety test.
And then Pally comes in.
I think it's cool that you're playing for the fourth bobsledder from Cool Runnings.
Oh, my God. I remember all of this.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So that is where we first met.
It's so weird to hear that back now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I say where we first met, we didn't actually meet each other that night.
Did we not?
No.
I remember you tweeted at me.
I tweeted at you after that.
Right.
So we e-met. We electronically met. Oof. So anyway, we have a great guest today. Unfortunately, it's not Sting.
Right.
If you listened last time, Bruce Springsteen, who's a huge gilly, he gave us the info for Sting, but Sting canceled on account of he was in hour 16 of tantric sex.
Right.
And he couldn't be interrupted.
Which is weird, because he texted us to say that he was currently in the middle.
Sexted us, really.
I guess he could take a break to text, but not do a podcast.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I get, because I do things while texting that I couldn't do a podcast at the same time as those things.
Of
so
course.
It makes sense. But he did set us up next week for Katy Perry.
Mm-hmm.
So we record these on Sundays, and this coming Sunday, February 1st, Katy Perry's going to be with us.
Yeah, she's totally free.
I don't see any reason she wouldn't be able to make
it. Exactly.
But in lieu of Sting today, I think we have a guest who, dare I say, is even better.
La la. Special guest.
Well, you know this gentleman from his work on comedy Bang Bang. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Neil Campbell.
Hello.
La la.
La la. La.
Neil's here. Yay.
Hello, Neil. Yay.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for doing this, man.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
It is a pleasure, an honor, and a thrill.
For me as well.
Oh, so tell us about your experience with the show Gilmore Girls, if you have any at all.
I have no real experience. The episode I watched was the first time I'd seen the show.
Mm-hmm.
But when I told my friends I was coming on, what came up was, I'm looking this up right now. I think I'm maybe roughly the same age as Alexis Bledel. I bet she's like 2 years younger than me.
I think she's
30.
She's like a year younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some point where I was like aware of Gilmore Girls when it was on. I mm-hmm. think it started when I was like 20 or something.
It was like 2000, yeah.
And then that's it, 20. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, but somehow just becoming aware. I don't think I had seen that. I don't think I had seen Traveling Pants. Was that kind of her first big
mm-hmm.
movie?
Sisterhood of that.
Yeah. And then, but I'm sure I saw, like, I definitely saw Sin City.
Yeah.
But it's somewhere along the way, you know, you just see people on magazine covers. And I remember going, like, I think Alexis Bledel's pretty.
Yeah.
And then that became my go to of, like, who do you think is a good looking celebrity? I would always go, Alexis Bledel, I think, is, like, really, really pretty. And then I was with a buddy once and we were at Nikki D's wood-fired pizza in Silver Lake.
Okay.
And I was with a couple friends, and she was there, like, on a date.
Oh.
And it was definitely like, that's the girl Neil thinks
that's
is pretty.
Pretty.
So that
pretty
was,
girl.
That's my, she's always, I guess, been my go-to of, who do you think is a pretty person? What is your ideal of a good-looking person?
Mm-hmm.
That was always the person.
Because she was a model before she was an actress as well.
Was she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Edward Herman talked about in that review.
Oh, right.
Or the interview that he gave.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's pretty,
beautiful.
In an in a unique sort of way.
That's my taste. Now we know.
I don't know if that's such a bold statement.
Is it weird to see her so young?
It was. Actually, when I watched it, I was like, oh, man, I don't remember at the time thinking she looked young because she was about my age. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, she's a kid. She's like a kid when I'm watching this.
Yeah.
Although I guess it was, she was probably about 20 when
I would say she's 20, 21.
Yeah, she's like 19 or 20, I think.
Because I think she was 19 when the show started.
Yeah.
So at this point, she's probably 21.
So definitely watching it again, I was like, oh, yeah, that's me thinking someone else roughly my age was attractive. Not like now I if I had just seen that episode now that I'm 34, I would have, I think, been like, oh, that's a kid I'm looking at, not like the most desirable person.
It's weird watching stuff when you realize that the actor in it is like measuring it in relation to your own age. So for you seeing Alexis when she's your own age and like, man, could I get a girl like that when I was that age? Or like, I do that sometimes when I watch shows and so, I'm like,
I think if I thought that, I would just be like, well, if Dean can get Alexis, I probably could do okay.
Yeah.
No offense to Dean.
He's got some nice chicken. So let's get into the episode. That was the soundboard. That wasn't Demi.
Yeah.
Let's get into the episode discussion. Episode 216.
There's the rub.
What does this title come from?
Shakespeare from...
But I mean, referencing... What is it referencing in the
massages.
Show?
Massage.
Do you think it was just that? That seemed like such an inconsequential part.
I think that the phrase, there's the rub, is kind of like, oh, that's the... I'm trying to think of the phrases. Oh, that's the thing. That's the key.
Yeah, I think it was, you get free massages. It's sort of, there's the rub's kind of like the catch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, you get to go on this pampered weekend, but you have to bring your mom.
Right.
Oh, there's the
And she
rub.
Has to commit adultery on the dance floor. Well, let's get into the discussion with a little segment we call Pop
Goes the Culture,
where we take every single supercut, every single pop culture reference in the show and put them together in an audio supercut, play them back and see what we can make of them. So this is episode 216. There's the rub. Did I say 2116? That'd be 2116.
This is season 21.
Yeah, that's sure. Right. So there's the Rub Pop Goes to the Culture.
The chairman of the board.
I'll have you working at the chicken ranch by the end of the month.
I guess so, Miss Daisy.
Well, this Frankenstein scale really adds to the whole...
Jess, you know, rock star, evil, or Kafka was here.
Typical guy response. Worship Kerouac and Bukowski. God forbid you'd pick up anything by Jane Austen.
Hey, I've read Jane Austen.
Yes, it's in the Luca Brasi mobile up front.
I really was just dropping off some food, so don't get all West Side Story on me, okay?
Careful, Mom. That's how they get you in the Moonies.
This was the big night you had planned? A rendezvous with Mr. Peanuts?
You've seen Risky Business, right?
Judy Salinger seems to dig it.
Yes, I'm going to be Ted Nugent.
The person who wrote this should be dressed in a clown suit, stuffing bodies under their porch.
That's kind of a deep cut. But did you guys get that one?
John Wayne Gacy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't get it immediately. I had to look it up.
Oh, I know all about serial killers.
Oh, boy.
No.
Dexter? You here?
It's me, Frank Underwood. I'm not bringing that back.
He's looking into a camera as he says this.
I brought a camera.
R.I.P. our Frank Underwood impressions for this season.
For the season.
Half the episode last time was just Frank Underwooding.
Power is an absolute disease.
I love power.
Austin Powers and Gold Member?
Yeah, baby. Power,
I love
baby.
Power. All right, sorry.
I love Powers, which is myself. Otherwise, I feel like... nothing too esoteric in this one.
Chairman of the board.
The chairman of the board. It was Frank Sinatra.
Oh, okay.
If I may interject.
Love
please do.
Two
please.
Things
yes.
on those. First, the chairman of the board. Someone makes a joke that it feels like it's stolen from like that famous Norm Macdonald
yes.
on Conan thing, which would have been 1998, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's famously Norm kind of derails...
Courtney Thorne Smith.
Courtney Thorne Smith's yep. interview with Conan when she's there to promote Chairman of the Board, her movie with Carrot Top. And Norm just keeps interjecting. Norm, my buddy Norm. Norm Macdonald keeps interjecting. He's not really my buddy. I'm making fun of myself. and at the end of the interview, Conan's like, okay, so what's the movie called? And she goes, Chairman of the Board. And then he says to Conan,
do something with that, you freak.
Yeah,
he says
exactly.
That to Norm,
to Norm
like
Macdonald.
A throwdown.
And then after like a beat, Norm goes, is board spelled B-O-R-E-D? And like it was, so I remember I watched it when I was, 18. And it's the funniest thing. And everyone I've ever talked to like knows about that clip.
Yeah.
And I know this would have been written pre-YouTube, so it's not like, it would have been online.
I don't know.
But I kind of feel like they must have known about that. Like, I feel like from the moment that was on, anyone I've talked to...
It could have been a reference.
Yeah, could
but be. If it was, they did not nail the delivery. It just felt like an awful joke when they said it.
Well, see, I don't
hope
know.
It's not B-O-R-E-D.
It is such a... That is such an interesting idea. It might have been parallel thinking, but it might have been because everyone in comedy seems to know that. That's like one of the legendary... talk show appearances, right. But is that because of YouTube? I don't know.
Yeah, because I do. This definitely came in a period between that being on the air and being readily available to watch whenever you want. So maybe it was like a, who knows, even if it was in the back of someone's mind because they watched a talk show four years earlier or something.
I wonder.
I don't know.
I wish Norm Macdonald was on Gilmore Girls. I wish he was Luke.
And then the other thing.
Yes.
Luca Brasimobile. I didn't really get... I was like, I know Luca Brasi's the enforcer in The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about a limo, but I guess I don't fully know the connection between... Is there ever anything with Luca Brasi driving a limo? Maybe there is, and I'm forgetting.
I think she's just suggesting that like a limo is for like rich and powerful people.
Mobsters,
yeah,
okay.
Mobsters.
Powerful.
Yeah, okay.
Powerful.
I wasn't sure if there was something more specific that I was like... I've never read Mario Puzo's novel. Maybe there's like a thing where he kills someone in the back of a limo or
one
something.
One of the appendices of the novels. That'd be insane if they were referencing that. But overall, and I found in this episode, there just weren't that many references as there have been lately.
No, which is I think why they had to shove in all that like loves Kerouac.
Yeah, stuff. That whole conversation, which is like very, I think when you're watching it, and certainly when I was watching it, because I'm a big fan, Demi's watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
When I was watching it as a kid, I was like, oh, what an interesting conversation about literature.
Yeah.
And when listening to it now, it's like, oh, boy.
Yeah, right.
Of course, Jess loves Kerouac.
Although, you know what it does kind of capture? The thing I've noticed more and more as I get older is when people are sort of, I guess I'm more meeting people when they're first out of college. like when I was artistic director at UCB and stuff, mm-hmm. and so people would start taking classes, and I was a teacher there, and I'd be teaching and stuff. And you definitely, I think there's a thing that people grow out of, I think, in their 20s, but that is really important to them when they're younger, which is what you like. Like, it's really important that other people like the same thing you like, or if they don't like something you like, that really upsets you, or it really like gets under your skin, and mm-hmm. and it, you like value people based on
their taste,
the books and movies and bands they like, and that's, and then like later it's like who cares, right. you know? Mm-hmm. But it's like this really important, and you see people like on Twitter get really like kind of aggravated and stuff too if someone doesn't
totally
like the thing they like, and they just get really mad.
Crazy,
yeah,
but, yeah. yeah. Allie has a great song about that. We were talking about it before we turned on the mics, but Allie Gertz, who may be a guest in a future episode coming
sometime.
I mean,
sometime. If someone cancels.
If someone cancels, perhaps.
She's your Al Roker for Conan.
Yes.
Yeah. Al Roker used to always fill in.
Yeah. But she has a song just exactly about that, about judging people and valuing based on taste or not. I'm forgetting the name of the song, but it's so good. It's on her Cosby Sweater album. But I do find that a lot, that even I feel like maybe Demi and I are probably coming out of that period right now where it's like you not only judge people, but you find identity in the things that you like and don't
right.
like. Are you a Breaking Bad guy or are you more of a Mad Men guy? And like putting people in metrics based on that.
Yeah.
And then if people don't like the thing you like, then you're breaking. Well, this is why you don't like it, because you're missing this, you know. And mm-hmm.
I've had so many conversations recently of me going like, "Oh, I don't really like this kind of thing," and people being like, "Oh, no, you're not listening to the right part of it." And it's just, it's such a frustrating thing to be trying to convince that you should like something, like it's a universal,
like it's a principle rather than
exactly.
taste, where it's like, "No, I just don't like strawberry."
Right?
That's
it's like,
fine.
This is fine.
Yeah. And it is funny too how this show Gilmore Girls kind of functions in that way as well. In a way, just because it's either you're on board or you're not,
right.
in the sense of like you're gonna get these references to the stuff, which is for primarily like a young adult audience, or you're not going to, and I don't know, it kind of separates the wheat from the chaff in that way a little bit.
It's a very much survival of the fittest kind of show.
Yeah. So let's read the Netflix synopsis for this episode.
Netflix synopsis.
Mm. Thanks for that theme.
I'm going to make up a new theme for anything I can't remember.
Okay. Lorelai and Emily's weekend at the spa doesn't go as planned. Meanwhile, Rory's night in becomes difficult when Paris, Jess, and Dean arrive.
That second line is probably a spoiler.
But you know what? It's better than they've done before. We found in these synopses that Netflix just like ruins everything. They'll just tell you exactly what happens in the synopsis.
Or they'll tell you the smallest thing. Like there's no in between.
Yeah, it's either the most specific thing or the most broad thing. So Rory's night in becomes difficult. I would rather them do that than the spoiler, especially for new viewers like you. So overall, how did you enjoy the show watching it for the first time?
I think I probably had the reaction I would bet a lot of people have, which is it seems a little weird that there doesn't seem to be a lot of difference between characters,
mm-hmm.
the way that they're written. Everyone speaks the exact same way is sort of the initial thing that like kind of overwhelmed. I'm like, every single one of these characters is like fast talking and likes to talk using references.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like there's one guy who's a little slower and gruffer and doesn't speak that way. Or there's someone who is like, whatever, not using that parlance in the episode I watched. I felt like, so that was, I think, the first, I don't even say hump to get over, but just like adjustment, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean,
like
I
it's
guess
all part of a fantastical world where they all have,
where everyone sort of speaks the same. But it's sort of, you know, at first I was like a little put off by it, I guess,
mm-hmm.
because I was expecting, I don't know, I just like when there's sort of different, it's like hearing different instruments
voices.
Play or something. Yeah,
I think the exact
things.
Thing that you're talking about can be demonstrated in this episode when Lorelai says, oh, you're going to have to burn the house down to get the smell out. And then Jess says the exact same line. And like two scenes later, like, oh, you're going to have to burn the house down to get the smell out.
Yeah, they have their joke about the Indian food place or something.
Which never is delivered, by the way.
The Indian food goes missing.
Yeah.
I think maybe the more interesting thing to do in this episode would be to follow that delivery boy
and
his journey into the depths of Stars Hollow.
That's episode 2, 16.5.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be serial season 2.
So that was sort of the first adjustment. But then, like anything, you kind of get into the rhythms of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I really liked. There's a show about a mother and a daughter, and these sort of like. It's a perspective. I don't, you know, most of the things I feel like everything now is like this weird anti-hero male like bad guy, but we got to like root for him through his flaws, and that describes most of the shows I love. But mm-hmm. I did like sort of hey, this is, I'm glad this exists, I guess,
because mm-hmm. There's truly not a lot of these shows anymore. The only one I can think of that's close, and obviously with the Graham connection, is Parenthood,
right?
Where it's not, there's no high concept and there's no anti-hero-ness. Because unless if it's a drama, then there has to be some sort. It's forensics. It's, you know, anti-hero, or you're a vampire. You know.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like at least.
So I like that. The plot with the mom and or the grandma and the mom. That was a little. I was like, this is an hour long drama story. Like that felt a little light. Like, and I was like, but maybe that's what this is. Maybe it's sort of like a breezy.
It is actually
comedy
that's
like an hour comedy, because it felt like, I was like, why couldn't that have been a half hour comedy plot? Why was that an hour long drama like a plot? Mm-hmm. You know, that felt a little. I was sort of expecting a thing to happen,
right?
And it was sort of like very sitcom-y, where it was like, my pampered weekend is getting, you know, I could see that on so many shows if they're like, I'm going to the spa, but my mom came. You know, it's definitely a comedy plot. But so even as I was kind of not as into those scenes, I don't know that I've really seen this story before, of which I relate to, of I know it's a night where we could do something. I just want to be alone. I like being alone. Being alone's fun for me. And then like, feeling like, but people don't think you should be alone.
Mm-hmm.
They think that something's wrong with you if you want to be alone, and so you need to like acquiesce to other people thinking, no, that's crazy to think mm-hmm. you want to be alone, and here, I'll come give you company, or I'll just sort of press you into being like, well, I guess you're right. And so I was like, hey, I haven't really seen that plot before, and that is one I relate to.
The glorification of the introvert.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a lot of B plots in sitcoms or dramas. I really enjoyed this episode. Just getting into the whole story with Lorelai and Emily, I found Lorelai to be very annoying in this whole episode for the first half.
I did too. I really found them both to be annoying. I found Lorelai annoying in how much she couldn't accept her mom mm-hmm. talking, but also the way that they shot it, it's like a lot of Lorelai not saying anything and Emily talking a lot,
mm-hmm.
and that made me annoyed at Emily.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're both annoying in different ways. Lorelai's is more frustrating because it's like Emily's trying to connect, and Lorelai's whole thing is,
and she's not being horrible. Like in a lot of this show, with the dynamic with Lorelai and Emily, Emily will be passive aggressive or make jabs or like make Lorelai feel lesser or slighted, and that doesn't really happen at all in this. Like, and if there was a little bit of that, Lorelai's total coldness towards her trying to connect for the first half of the episode would have been more plausible for me.
Right.
But I just wasn't, I had no sympathy for Lorelai. I was like, yeah, Emily's jabbering on, but she's trying, you know?
Here's what I was getting, again, not knowing the show at all.
Sure.
The first shot, Emily's the grandma.
Mm-hmm.
First shot we see of her, she's in like a mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the phone with her daughter. And I didn't know that the grandma was rich on the show. So, okay, so that's establishing her character. She shows up in a limo. Okay, so she's used to, like, I figure that's the sort of difference. She's used to a pampered, wealthy lifestyle. And then they get to the spa, and Lorelai is less impressed by stuff, and the mom is so obsessed with, like, the robe. And I was like, this plot now seems it's like the person who is super wealthy and used to nice things isn't used to nice things. Mm-hmm. I didn't really get if there is something to why the grandma is so obsessed with a robe if she's, that's probably what her whole life is like.
I think probably for the Emily character, because she had said in the teaser where they're establishing that, and like, oh, come to the spa, blah, blah, blah. I've never done it before. So I think for her, it was like her first time out at a spa.
Okay. She's done, so specifically a spa she just hasn't done.
She's done nice things, but I feel like she's not done nice things that are like for herself and not for her image. Like she's very much a
charity DAR function planner. Gotcha. Not exactly like let's go to Maui for 2 weeks right. and just sip Mai Tais on the beach.
She was very confused at the concept that mud baths were made with real mud.
Real mud.
There were twigs in mine. Were there twigs in yours?
Yeah. I mean, you know what I did love about this episode, though? What? We got the return of Tom.
Well, we broke through this wall. We found some pipes that shouldn't be there. We got to move them.
Move them where?
Not sure. We got to find out what they do first.
You're kidding.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing I like more than a good moving a pipe joke.
Fine. One more week, that's it.
Oh, sure. Construction ultimatum. Ha! That's even funnier than my moving a pipe joke.
Is he temporary, though?
Temporary?
Is he temporary?
No, he's in the show throughout.
Okay,
and cool. He's on Bunheads as well.
Is he?
Yep.
Which one was Tom?
Tom had like four lines in the teaser.
My favorite line was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. My favorite. I love a good moving a pipe joke."
This is very good.
Oh yeah.
He's the one that Luke screamed at him, "Tom, you are dead, Tom."
Right.
Last scene.
And then he says, "Sorry, Tom." Immediately.
Yes.
It did seem crazy that they would keep that restaurant open
while the construction was happening.
Drywall's falling. I was like, is this the plot? Like, it really was. I was, as the mom and daughter stuff was happening, I was like, I guess I don't watch the show, but what are the stakes if they don't get along? I don't really know what, what's at stake
here.
They're arguing. She's ruining her weekend, but it's like the worst thing that happens is like your free spa weekend.
Yeah.
Like there was almost nothing at stake there.
Mm-hmm.
And it got most interesting to me when Rory had, like, the other guy showing up and mm-hmm. she's trying to, like, lie and stuff. And it was like, okay, I could tell she's dealing with something complicated.
Yeah,
that seems like there's stakes.
And
the mom and stuff, and I was just like, there's what? So if you guys argue, what's the big deal?
That's what's so interesting about this show is because I think for that, I would say the Emily Lorelai conflict is probably one of the big kind of conflicts at the very heart of the show.
Right.
But it doesn't... It's not very clear what is at stake other than like connection or not connection. And it's just kind of the difficulty.
Or this like assumption you should like have a good relationship with your parent or something.
Yeah. Which I think that's an assumption the show makes is like harmonious relationship. Well, and it comes up in this episode. Like, why can't we have, Emily's talking to Lorelai, why can't we have what you and Rory have? Why is that so difficult for us?
Right.
And why is it different and blah, blah, blah. And that I think plays out for such a longer amount of time over the next, five seasons of the show, that it is hard on an episode-to-episode basis to get a good sense of it, especially if you're being dropped in and watch it for the very first time.
I'm realizing now, we're eventually going to be dropping people into a point where it's like, they're not going to get any context whatsoever. Like, they'll just jump into an episode and there'll be this character introduced that, like, for us, it'll be like, what a big deal, and they'll be like, I don't get it.
Right.
But I'm excited for that point where people are just
completely
blanket
completely disoriented.
Yeah. But yeah, then you have that cold open where it's like, okay, they're trying to keep a restaurant open while it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, there could be so much so much could go wrong. And that's
health code violations.
Yeah. But then they're like, that's not what the story's about.
Easy,
the story's about this.
Easy health code violations. If people are getting hit on the head with like falling bricks, which by the way, a lot more physical comedy in this episode than in most with the umbrella moments.
Yeah, where she just sits there with an umbrella. I was like, I didn't know this show was like I don't know, like
fantastical like that.
That's quirky. It's like, yeah, she's just like sitting there not doing anything. Like
that's kind of Wes Anderson
gag to happen,
wasn't it? It was a little Wes Anderson,
or like Keystone Cops.
Someone on Twitter said like, "Oh, wasn't it so adorable when Jess handed Rory that umbrella?" And I say, no.
Nope. It's hard for me to think anything Jess does is adorable.
I think it was cute when both of the girls were under it together, Lorelai and Rory, but I don't think him being like, here's an umbrella.
Jess is the guy that delivered all the food.
Right, okay. Right.
He's the bad boy.
Rocky Balboa's son.
Balboa's son, that's right. Yeah, little Rocky.
I've realized that part of the reason I don't like Jess might be in the way that he talks.
It's tough, man. I feel like he learned to act on this show. Milo, we love you. Come on the show.
Yeah, Milo, we have great respect. But he has this way of talking like he's just been smoking for so long, and then he ends it like with this glottal.
Yeah, we talked about the vocal fry, the croak. Yeah. The kind of the thing that girls do a lot where it's like they talk like this, but then they end like this. But he does like the male version of that.
Yeah. And he does it every, I feel like every time he thinks he's being clever, he's like, that's how to end the sentence.
I know. That's his version of saying nailed it.
Right.
Saying it verbally.
Yeah. It's the verbal nailed it.
It was upsetting. So, I mean, let's talk about that whole story. Jet, first of all, what is your impression of Jess? Like, coming in, new viewer, fresh eyes.
With Jess,
adult
that's
male.
Milo Ventimiglia guy.
Milo Ventimiglia guy.
I will say that was the story I was the most into. Because I guess I just liked the... I mean, he's like a weirdo, but it's sort of... Or his acting is strange, but on one hand, I kind of like there was a one guy a little off the rhythm of the show that wasn't... Even though his dialogue, like, he's still making references and stuff like anyone else.
Right.
But, I kind of like that I guess the love triangle, I assume that becomes a big part of the show.
And how?
That there isn't, like, a good guy and a bad guy. That I was like, hey, they both seem to like her. She seems to like both of them. I will say, I thought it was... I mean, this is drama. People don't do what they should. But there was a lot of, like, she just would lie. And that wasn't... I feel like on other shows that are equally light, it sort of is like, if you lie, then you later learn you shouldn't lie.
Right.
And she is, like, a few times where she just, like... straight up lies about stuff, and
oh,
it's
like
never...
Paris liking Jess. Is this true, Rory?
Yeah, yes. And she just commits to that. Yeah, that's it's true. And then it's like, that's okay. That's all that happens. She just likes to lie and never comes back to it. Yeah,
that's interesting. And it is funny, like just thinking more about the genre of the show and what it is in terms of like anti-heroes and stuff, and what is more popular with like cable dramas and stuff. And
right.
Is Lorelai kind of an anti-hero as the show goes on? Because we've been going through it. Demi's watching it for the first time. So, and watching it again as an adult, like, you do see kind of a transformation. Like, they're fun, they're quirky, they make jokes, da-da-da, blah-blah-blah. But Lorelai acts in very heinously selfish ways that the show sometimes absolves her of completely and
but
sometimes does
times,
not.
Like,
a lot of times
supports.
Does not. Yeah.
I don't think she's an anti-hero because anti-hero suggests that there is a huge part of her personality that's purposefully... not good. But she's clearly, like, even when the show doesn't absolve her of her mistakes, they're very much like, hey, even good people make mistakes. It's not really a conflict.
And Lorelai's, that's a mom, right?
Yes.
What is her job on the show?
She manages an inn called The Independence Inn in Stars Hollow.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, this is a weekend episode, so, you know.
Yeah, it's a Weekend of Bernie's episode.
It's a getaway.
It is fun. We got... Oh, by the way, did you like how the hotel maitre d' or whatever was played by Jensen Karp?
It was Jensen. That's who it was. Okay.
Was it? I don't know if it was. Oh, it just looked exactly like him.
In my head, I was trying to figure out who I thought it looked like, and I just kept going, David Wayne? I don't know. It wasn't David Wayne, obviously.
It was not. It was. It looked a lot like Jensen Karp.
It does look like Jensen Karp.
So, Jensen.
Jensen,
we love you. Come on the show.
I was like, I don't want to get a Shining thing going. We're repeating the same thing over each other.
You know, we got a little Twitter Q&A.
Twitter Q&A.
This is from our boy, our man.
Poop Doctor?
At Poop Doctor.
Yeah. One of my favorite people that submits Twitter Q&As is named Poop Doctor.
He's not a real doctor.
Not a real doctor, but his bio says, welcome to my ass, which I think is the funniest thing in the world because I'm seven.
It is the funniest thing in the world. And in fact, we're going to have a little theme song every time we talk about it.
Poop Doctor?
No, it's going to go... Welcome to my ass. And so we'll do that coming out of tangents and stuff as a way to bring us out of those.
Okay, what did
he say? His question is, why does anyone want to hang out with this girl who loves to read the dictionary and recreationally does laundry? Follow up, like, hey, let's do laundry together and talk about shows that aired before my dad was even born. But I get
know.
It. She is a magnet. And I feel like there's certain people in life that just attract a lot of people to them that are the center of a lot of people's social life.
Yeah, but why Rory?
Why Rory?
Yeah.
Because Dean's her boyfriend. Paris has no true other friends.
That's
I love
so
Paris
sad.
In this episode.
I
oh my gosh. Did you not so much?
No, I love Paris in every episode is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Paris.
It looked like you were about to give an asterisk to it, though.
No, I will say that I love her, and then I realize also that she's just the saddest person. Like, her family life is all in shambles, and I feel bad for her, but then she turns around and just is like... smart as a whip and just has these crazy comebacks and I'm in love with her again.
It is funny how, like I said, like I really love that plot of someone just wants to be alone and then like that doesn't, the world doesn't let that happen or you know, her friends won't let that happen. It's fine. I guess it's just, you know, it's what gives the show its character that I was, that like then they do throw in, oh, I want to do all this laundry or like this Paris thing where she was, it was like insane. Like they would get like I have an A minus. I need to study Friday night and yeah. 7 a.m. And it's like, well, I guess that's where the show gets its voice is it's not just do you want to hang out, which for me would have probably worked just as well, but right. I guess wouldn't have made it Gilmore Girls. You
right.
know?
And that's not the nature of Paris's relationship with Rory at all. They're not, they're kind of frenemies yeah, okay. on the show.
It's okay. weird that
so
she,
there would need to be a reason.
Because then they get rid of that. Like they have a tail end of her talking, like tutoring her. Mm-hmm. And they're like, do you just want to eat? Do you want to hang out? And then it becomes like, oh, it got to a point where that's all it needed to be anyway. It was just, I wanted to be alone and now there's people here eating, you know, but.
Right.
The tutoring thing was such like a, I guess it was just there for some mm-hmm. jokes. It was never really like, I'm yeah. not getting this. You know, right. it wasn't like the story. It wasn't
and probably
like
the motivation, too.
Yeah.
Probably between those two characters.
There's such a weird moment where she's like, are we friends? And I feel like they've had that conversation a lot. Like, of are we, like, are Rory and Paris friends? Mm-hmm. Or are they just kind of
And how can they be lovers
into...
if they can't be friends? I would say, you know?
Right. That's the real question.
How can they start over when the fight?
I think Paris and Rory are the Gilmore Girls.
Oh.
No, they're the Paramore Girls.
Paramore Girls. There is a lot of, and again, I don't read fanfic, but there's a lot of like lesbian shipping for Paris and Rory.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Like everyone says that there's kind of a lesbian undercurrent to the relationship.
When Kevin said I don't read fanfic, he did a motion to as if to suggest that he's lying. I want you all to know that.
No, I didn't.
He's doing it again. He did the motion.
Excuse me.
Have Marty and Elaine been on the show before?
Marty and Elaine? No, this is the first time.
Okay.
So Marty and Elaine, that is the singing duo that when Lorelai and Emily go to the steakhouse.
Right.
They perform in L.A.
They're
right?
at the Dresden every week.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Swingers also. When they go to the Dresden and Swingers, and yeah, I don't know what the schedule is, but they're there Dresden on Vermont like every single week. Yeah.
Free plug for Marty and Elaine. So I guess they're in Connecticut in this reality.
Right? Yeah. No, they went. They're on a tour.
Yeah, I do like. Okay, so Lorelai finally decides not to be a monster to her mom.
Yeah.
Let's go out. Let's go to the steakhouse. And let's almost commit adultery. This, I don't know. Like, if it was my mother, what were you going to say?
Part of me feels like, no, of course it wasn't adulterous. But at the same time, I understand her guilt of Richard not being yeah. there.
And you're playing with fire,
It's playing with fire, but I think it was a very playful sort of, like, she knew there was no risk of her mm-hmm. going to hook up with that dude.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. From my perspective, yeah. I didn't know... I knew there was a grandfather character. I didn't know if they were married still.
Gotcha.
He's not in this episode at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's no reference really to him until that point. And I was watching with someone else, and I said, who also was unfamiliar with the show, but I thought maybe was familiar. And when they got and she was dancing and slow dancing, I literally was like, oh, is she married to someone else? Like, I... thought she wasn't, and then like seconds later she's like, I can't do this. I was like, oh yeah, that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I don't think like Lorelai had I think like Lorelai underreacted. Like her mom was justified to be like, I shouldn't be like
slow dancing
with this guy. That seems a little fishy.
The first dance was fine.
Right.
The first
right.
dance was just like fine and you could do that with anyone. But then the second dance, if you're just like literally just holding and swaying together. So yeah, Lorelai does underreact, but then Emily goes into a turbo mode that is insane.
I have to go.
Yeah.
How long does it take to find a coat? I think that could have been completely solved by her just saying, I'm married, but continuing to dance. Just let the other guy know nothing's gonna happen here. But also
or just say
dance.
I'm uncomfortable. It's been fun. I'm married.
Yeah.
Here's my number. See you later.
Here's my number. I know a great divorce attorney.
Call me maybe.
Call me maybe. Can we talk about the extras in that scene? I don't know if you guys were watching them, but they were all awful dancers.
Oh, yeah.
They were all very, very off the beat and just kind of doing this weird, like, commercial. It was like... in a commercial where you know they're not playing the music, they're going to add it later. So they're just like, just do a dance. And that's what it felt like.
Oh, no.
But it was really funny to watch. If you're listening to this, go back and watch them dancing in that bar on the first song or the first few songs where it's not the slow one. I don't remember how they danced then. But on the like fast ones, they're all just kind of all over the place. And it's really funny to watch.
Someone asked on Twitter if the Emily I'm not citing these people on Twitter. They're all just strangers to me.
Yeah, you're no poop doctor.
I don't care who you are.
I'm kidding.
Where you're from, what you did, as long as you love me. But someone asked on Twitter, did you tear up at the Emily and Lorelai scene at the end?
I'm sure that's for you, Kevin.
Right. Yeah, they addressed it specifically to me.
Did you?
And my answer is no. But I did tear up.
Oh. Kevin has a habit of tearing up whenever Emily's on the screen.
Well, not just whenever, but just during emotionally poignant scenes in the show.
But you did tear up.
When Paris took the bullet for Rory.
Aw.
Because it was just such a...
That was a sweet moment, but I also wish that it had been absolved in some way. I wish it had been like, Paris took the bullet, and then she talks it over with Dean, admits that Paris didn't do anything, and Dean is still okay.
Yeah. And see, to me, this is it. This is the beginning of, like, of Rory slipping away. Because up to this point, and there's even been complaints that we've had on this show, like, Rory's too perfect. She's straight A student. She's a little cherubic angel of a person, sweet to everybody, blah, blah, blah. And this starts kind of her rebellion and the dismantling of that character and integrity that she's had for so long.
Right.
Which I appreciate because, yeah, she's lying. And then that last shot, which is super creepy, of Dean.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
That was my, there was stuff I wasn't necessarily responding to, but I did like her sort of like love triangle thing. And that last shot of him kind of looking in, and it's not anything like too, it's not like she's seeing him kiss someone. It's not like a soap opera cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. It's just a kind of thing of like, yeah, God. This isn't going to work, or like this sucks, or I could see
going
something
in a bad
there.
It was nicely done.
And he's just watching. And then her Lorelai comes up to the guy, right? And she's kind of like,
to Dean. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's sort of is, I forget what she says, but it feels like she's kind of like, life's sort of hard, isn't it, kid? Kind of a thing. And I was like, hey, that's kind of a cute, sweet moment. Dean. That made me want to like see what happens next in that story.
Yeah.
She also is not a huge fan of Jess, so...
Lorelai.
So it's both of them watching, being like, I don't like where this is heading.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I came to the revelation in this episode that I don't know how I feel about Dean anymore. He does a lot of things that almost strike me as, like, borderline abusive when it comes to Rory.
Yeah, because people have said that, but let's talk about
that. Okay, so the first thing that he does is when she says, oh, I don't really want to hang out, he goes, why? In, like, this very aggressive tone of, like, what the fuck, dude? And it's so, it's, like, too much, but then he sort of calms down. And then when they're arguing later, he's just yelling at her, like, and the only thing that convinces him is when Paris takes the bullet. And then he says, if you say it, I have to believe it, or something like that. And this weirdly...
Yeah, that was a weird way of putting it, because it did make it... Because what does that imply? If you say it, I have to believe it. That's not like...
That's not, I do believe you.
I trust you implicitly, and you're my girlfriend, and I love you.
It's passive-aggressive.
It's like, here's the contract. Yeah. And what else did he do that upset you?
Just in general, he seems to have, like, he gets very angry about Rory not agreeing with him on something, or, like, not wanting to do something. Mm-hmm. It's not even like, oh, come on, why? It's just straight up, why? What the hell? Like, almost as if he feels like... Like, there's a
it's
rule
owed to
you
him.
Do.
Yeah.
That's funny, and I completely agree with you, but I guess as, like, a dumb straight male, thinking back to when I was young, I mean, I certainly wasn't tall and powerful like him, but if there was one character that I projected myself into, it was probably him.
Really?
Where I was like, oh, I kind of know how it feels if you're, like, dating someone who's, like... You know, like back then, I definitely like, you know, college and stuff. I feel like I'm dating someone who maybe doesn't think I'm not as charming as some other people, and I'm not as cool. And I sort of feel lucky to be dating this person. And then you sort of are like, can just sort of see the writing on the wall, and it's like tough to deal with. And you're not quite sure how to like you can argue yourself like into. Well, I should be the one you like because I do this and this and this, you know? And it's like, that's not how it works. And so watching his story, I was like, hey, I relate to this guy. You just want to hang out by yourself? Okay, like, I'm being the good boyfriend. Like, at first I'm like, is everything okay? But okay, no, I'll be the good boyfriend. And yeah, you can hang out by yourself. No, but I'll still show up and surprise you. Like, it's this sort of desperation
thing. Inviting
himself.
Yeah, I didn't like that. And I think you do raise a good point because you said, oh, when the writing's on the wall, and then you kind of start acting like a weirdo. Because I feel like that's when we've seen, and I think it's part the writers like striving to differentiate him with Jess, but also I think it's a character thing where he's like threatened and it's like, oh shit, there's this guy. and Rory's talking with him, and he does feel so very threatened that he is starting to act in those ways that are like encroaching on Rory's liberty.
Have those guys both been on during the course of the show? Have they both been there the whole time? And has she always been dating Dean, or did they come in at different times? And
always pretty much been dating Dean. Jess got introduced at the near the beginning of season two.
Yeah,
in 205.
So he's been here about 15 episodes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and
he's
Dean
the new
was
kid.
And was just basically her boyfriend from the get go.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. So that's their dynamic.
What show is he on now?
Supernatural.
Same haircut.
He's the lead in that Friday the 13th remake. I saw that.
Yes.
Is he?
I still don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Padalecki.
Is it okay? Because someone else pronounced it Padalecki.
Well, they're wrong.
It's Padalecki.
Padalecki.
Okay, cool.
Padalecki, we'll have you come on the show.
Taylor Doozy.
Okay. Let's ask Neil about this, because the guy who owns the market is named Taylor Doozy.
Nope.
Okay, the guy who names the market is named Taylor Dosey, but the last name is spelled D-O-O-S-E. Is that weird to you, or is that like whatever?
D-O-O-S-E?
Yeah.
And it's pronounced Dosey.
Dosey. It feels like it's like someone knew someone with that name growing up and thought it was...
Who said
that? That's how you pronounce it?
Was that Patrick that said that same thing?
That's, yeah.
Yeah. It feels like the kind of thing that if you pronounce it that way, it's got to be a reference to someone.
Yeah. Like if nothing comes to mind, but if I thought back, I bet I can think of people with interesting last names or pronunciations of last names that I wouldn't have expected. I go, hey, I'll put that in a script someday.
Yeah. It must be. We'll ask Amy when she comes on the show, because that'll definitely happen. Oh, by the way, just to get back to credit that question of did I cry during the Emily Lorelai moment, that was Caitlin Spiller who asked that. So thank you, Caitlin, for shaming me in front of my friends. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is... I'm going to say it, gang. It's a product I actually use. I've been using it for 10 years now. I've made every single website I've made in the last decade using Squarespace, because Squarespace actually has everything I need. If you want to start a completely personalized website with a new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint is your answer. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business, and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. You can do so much with Squarespace, like email campaigns for outreach. You can have analytics to find out who's visiting your website and why. And you can have eShop e-commerce functionality. I used that when I was doing my little bake shop on there for a while. I stopped doing it, but man, the website I had for a little bit looked really good because I used Squarespace. And there's so much I didn't know about setting up my shop that they were able to answer for me over the chat and their award-winning 24/7 customer support. So right now, go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, let's talk about your social battery. What is it right now? Is it drained? Is it bursting with energy? Why is it at the level it's at? There's all these external factors that can make it the way it is. Maybe you're less social during certain seasons. Maybe you're experiencing a lack of boundaries with certain people that's making it more drained than it needs to be. Well, either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been in therapy for 11 years now, and it has been vital and crucial for figuring out how to not overexert myself socially, to keep my battery at a good charge, to not keep it too drained when I'm dealing with all the people that I actually want to be dealing with, and not dealing with people in the way that I don't want to be, which is, of course, due to a lack of good boundaries or how to cope with people. And you learn how to do those things with therapy, because therapy gives you the tools to tune in to yourself and understand, oh, I need this. I don't need this. I need to communicate this. I need to say this. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/GilmoreGuys. Ellie Hansen at Eleanor_Ellie asks, I think 216 shows the chemistry that Jess and Rory have and Dean and Rory don't. Do you see any plus or positive to Jess and Rory? I think to say Jess and Rory together.
I feel like every interaction they have right now is like Rory trying to prove that she doesn't like Jess and Jess trying to be the bad boy that Rory likes. And then eventually she like turns towards being positive about him. But this is the first time where it's...
Demi, are you okay?
I am dying. I contracted the disease from Contagion. This is the first time where that interaction happens and like Rory kind of not goes along with it, but sort of like, okay, so the interaction I'm specifically talking about is in the diner at the end when she goes to pay and realizes that Jess like brought food for her. Like she plays the whole like, oh, I realized it was you card, and then just kind of drops it. In the first scene that is them coming together, which is when he brings the food over, she's very much like, okay, you left the food, now get out, and then he stays. And that seems like how all of their interactions are. So I can't, it's hard for me to feel like, oh, they should be together, they're so cute, when it's like all of their interactions are him tricking her and then her eventually succumbing to being okay with being tricked.
Yeah, that was the thing that put me off of him the most in this episode, was how kind of how he weaseled himself into staying in the house. That it was not like the dance, that dance they do all the time where it's like, oh, what makes you think I like you? What makes you think I'm doing this for you? What makes you think I have any affection for you? Why is that charming? Why is that fun?
It's not.
It's not, oh, I'm going to be respectful of your relationship, so if I have feelings for you, I'm not going
to
say them.
Even aside from respectfulness, like if he were even just to, like, she's in a relationship, right, but if he were to stop playing the what makes you think I like you card and stop playing the begrudging, like, just let you running into her happen and not go out of your way to do all of these things, to not only get yourself in there, but also sort of, like, be standoffish to her boyfriend and just be like, oh, yeah, oh, looks like I'm here now, like,
their little confrontation on the porch. Right.
See, you brought a little something, too. Is that ice cream? That's so nice. A tiny little ice cream pack is just big enough for two. Hey, are you guys going to feed each other? Because that's just so darn cute. Oops, you're doing that towering over me thing, huh? I tell you, you've really got that down. It helps that you're 12 feet tall, but this Frankenstein scale really adds to the whole...
Jess.
Okay, I'm going. Look, man, I really was just dropping off some food, so don't get all West Side Story on me, okay?
I can't handle it when Jess tries to be clever.
Oh, you're doing the standing over me thing, huh?
Yeah. And do you think that's the writers, like, what do you think the perspective is that we're supposed to have and the way they're framing him? Do you think it's like, oh, isn't he clever? And like, oh, he's picking at him, but, you know, don't you just kind of have to love him despite yourself? Or is it like, look at this little dumb shit trying to... Well, I guess it's
like, yeah, there are other options. Like, he's not going to be like, all right, sorry, bye.
Right.
Kind of like it's like he has to like puff out his chest more or something. Yeah.
Right. I wonder if the writers think he's as clever as he thinks he is.
Right.
Because the way it's aged, we get so many emails and tweets like, yeah, I loved him growing up when I was like, you know, 17 years old. And I was watching the show as a kid for the first time, blah, blah, blah. And now as an adult, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I wonder that a lot about teen stuff, because every time I watch anything with like teenagers having relationships or love triangle or whatever, and that's almost what I kind of liked, the vibe I got from Lorelai at the end of like, this is just stuff you guys are all going to have to go through. It's just because anytime I watch stuff with teenagers, I'm like, ultimately, if someone seems like smart and put together and all that stuff, it's like, I want them to go off to college and not be right. dating their high school. I want them to always, no matter what the triangles or what the relationship is, I think it's like the Wonder Years had like the best, like eventually we broke up and went off to college and like did other things. You know, where it's like they didn't...
Spoiler for Wonder Years. All the Wonder Years.
You know, where it's not like, oh, and then that was the love of my life. You know, the way that like a Boy Meets World does do. Mm-hmm. You know? And so it's like...
Oh, you think... So those shows like set up unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, or I'm just like, oh, if I've seen this character that I really like, I want them to like get out. Now, again, I'm projecting because I... grew up in Virginia, then I went to college in Iowa and didn't know anyone when I got there, mm-hmm. and then left from there and moved to New York and didn't know, I knew a few people there, but like didn't move with my crew or anything. And so it's just like, I'm like, that's what you should do, right? So maybe I'm just looking for reinforcement, but I'm like, when you see like smart, bright, the whole world's ahead of them, young characters,
yeah,
I just want them to eventually go, you know what, I shouldn't be with him or him. I can go through messy stuff right now, and I'm eventually going to learn I got to get out there in the world and not be like be tied to anything from when I lived as a dependent.
Yeah.
Like, I just got to get out and be independent and completely start fresh. Yeah. That's how I feel about anything with kids. So mm-hmm. I wonder with writers if they're, they might be aware that he's not as clever. Like, I don't think they probably think he's as clever as he thinks he is, but I think they do realize in his world that is clever. Like, I don't think that they're trying to write the other characters should think he's not clever.
Right.
Maybe. But I don't know. Yeah, that's always my feeling with anything with like high school relationship stuff.
Because it's always being written by adults, presumably.
Yes. Definitely.
Wouldn't it be funny if there was a TV show about high school kids written by high school kids?
It would be the worst TV show of all time.
Or would it be the best?
I don't think high school kids know plot development.
Not yet. Got to get Robert McKee books in them classrooms.
Yeah.
That's Obama's initiative next year.
I want a McKee book in every classroom.
President Obama, are you
and
here?
A copy of Adaptation in every AV club.
One of the questions, actually, before we go on, I have no way to transition into this, but I just want to play this.
No transition?
Mucho mac and cheese.
Yeah. Wait, play it again. I was talking.
Play what again?
Mucho mac and cheese.
Out of context, that clip sounds like a commercial for mac and cheese in like a Spanish-speaking country. No, that's Paris talking to her nanny saying that like I'm staying at my friend's house because there's mac and cheese. There's so much mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. But I just love that clip of her saying it.
Saying
mucho mac and cheese.
I need to get better timing soundboard clips.
Yeah.
If only there were not for it. Hey, I need to take a hint from the real
Electro Lemon. Oh,
God. Here we go.
I know. Slowly but surely, we're going to take the podcast form, which is semi-respectable.
Is it?
And devolve it into a morning radio zoo crew.
Right. It's going to be a lot of fart noises and...
yeah, baby. Like soundboard such as...
It's just going to be all Austin Powers.
Here's kind of a homophobic line.
Oh my God. I didn't realize you were talking about the show, and I was like, no, Kevin, don't.
Here, let me make a homophobic... Like, you thought I was going to say something willfully homophobic.
That's why I was like, what?
Here's a homophobic thought. What if gays...
I'm scared of gays.
I don't value them as people. In the restaurant, when the dude that Emily dances with is checking her out, he's looking over at Emily... And then Emily's like, is he really looking at me? And Lorelai goes, well, he's not looking at Steve. As if that would be the most ridiculous thought in the world.
You don't think it's that homophobic? They've had more homophobic lines for sure, but...
Definitely.
I think it could just be... In my head, it was just like, well, he's not looking at Steve because Steve's not hot or something. I don't know. It could be a gay joke, but I don't think it's an awful gay joke, you know? I don't think the punchline is that would be crazy if he were looking at a dude.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was just her way of going like, yeah, he's looking at you.
So am I homophobic phobic?
I think you might be.
Whoa, I have homophobia phobia.
Mm-hmm. Homophobia.
Phobia?
Phobia.
Let's go get some pho after this. And then
I would like some homopho.
That's just the same. And
Latin root joke, sick.
One thing, I feel like whenever the characters are supposed to be having a great time, this is in a lot of TV shows and movies, but when it's like, hey, they're really enjoying themselves, they're having fun, they really overdo it in the reaction shots.
Mm-hmm.
So in that scene, as good as it was with Emily and the dude dancing, the first one that was like fun,
yeah.
They cut to Lorelai and the bartender, and they look insane.
They really
they
do.
They're just like, like, out of their mind, so stoked for
Why is the bartender, like, at all invested in this? Because he's like, hey, your mom looks hot up there.
Yeah, she really does.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. The bartender was really getting involved.
Yeah. He's, like, shining his glass and just being like, oh, wow, I hope nobody needs a drink because I'm watching this.
Did you like the scene with the bathrobes, sealing the bathrobes at the end?
I don't know.
Yeah?
I like the idea behind it of them stealing something as like
and
a
bonding.
This is us.
Yeah.
It obviously was a forced bonding, which is not awful. I think it's what they needed, but I don't know. Something about the bathrobes just made me feel like I don't care.
Yeah, I think that was when it came back to that. I was like, oh, is that what this was about? That the mom's not cutting loose enough? Or, yeah. or the mom doesn't try to relate to Lorelai by doing what by acting like her
mm-hmm.
or something like it just didn't feel it was I was like I don't know I was like it felt like it's a thing to do because our story's almost done in the episode but yeah. I didn't really like go yeah she this even as like a not even like oh whether Emily does this or not just like as a suggestion would Lorelai really feel any better if the mom agrees to this or not it
right.
just sort of seemed Is that what was your issue mm-hmm. this whole time?
See, and I think, did you have a thought?
Oh, I do, but I'll, you go.
Okay. Well, my thought was, I think for this show, because it is so like long running and complicated, we talked about how the conflict lasts for such a long time, and it doesn't become clear on an episode to episode level. It is interesting, like, what the perspective of the show is and what we're supposed to take it to be. Like, what is a win in the writer's eyes? Like, is Emily supposed to become more like Lorelai or Lorelai like Emily? Or you know, or Lorelai just they become closer, better together. Like I think of 30 Rock. In 30 Rock, you could I think another writer used this, but I'll just steal it from them. Like 30 Rock is like a Venn diagram. And on one hand you have Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy, and their relationship being the heart of the show, over the course of 7 seasons, they become more and more like each other. Jack Donaghy becomes more feeling, more sensitive, and less like corporate business, elitist, blah, blah, blah. And Liz Lemon, you know, starts getting her life together, starts becoming more practical, starts taking charge in her relationships and
right.
stuff. And they start like morphing into each other. Or at least the Venn diagram becomes more of a circle.
Yeah.
So on this show, I don't know what the Venn diagram or the arcs are supposed to be exactly with Emily and Lorelai. Like I've never tried to define it before.
Yeah, it's a little hard to map because it sort of is like when you look at Lorelai, her daughter like couldn't be more perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So she's clearly done an excellent job. Like I don't
right.
know what
yeah.
flaw she needs to correct. You know, it's not like you say like Liz Lemon. It's like oh yeah, she does need to be. You could see where like she's not getting the respect she deserves, and maybe if she learns from Jack Donaghy, she'll. You know, and emulates him in some way without losing what makes her, she'll get more of that respect, whatever. You know, maybe that's her trajectory, whether it's the right one or not. It's at least seems to be like the where it could be going. But on this, I was a little like, I guess she's already a perfect mom.
Right.
And so she just has this other, it's not that like she needs to correct this thing about herself and you know, and she seems pretty great too. So her mom, it sort of is like where does this go outward in your life
right.
if you change then what does it improve for other people you know or for yourself even what if she becomes more like her mom or her mom becomes more like her
mm-hmm.
how does that better either one of them aren't they both pretty much doing great already
my thing is now that you mention it I feel like if we're going with the Venn diagram Venn diagram metaphor I think that right now Lorelai's already in the middle of where she should be and that's something of a flaw because I don't see her changing in any way I feel like even in season 7 it's going to kind of be like oh Lorelai's still the same she did a great job with her kid doesn't really have to do anything
mm-hmm.
with Emily she needs to loosen up, or at least that's what I feel like the writers are telling us a lot of the time. So her character arc would be sliding more towards Lorelai, but if Lorelai's not also sliding in the same way, it's just kind of like a, it's posturing us. Oh, there it goes again. I keep saying posturing.
You know, this is the first time using this app.
It is, but it's posturing us to think, hey, isn't Emily kind of a square? Shouldn't she be more like Lorelai, the cool hip mom? Mm-hmm. When in reality, it's like Lorelai's good, but she's also kind of annoying, and I don't see that changing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just our perception. It's not like how we're supposed to perceive her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, watching it, I was like, okay, so the mom's giving her a free weekend, but it's like, but the trick is you have to spend it with me. So it's already not like on The Office or something where John Krasinski wants to have a party and doesn't want to invite Michael Scott because right. He doesn't want Michael to do his weird thing at the party and, you know, and wants to just have his own non-work party, and then Michael Scott finds out and kind of keeps trying to get invited, you know, and so it's like eventually it's like, you know, I should sacrifice this thing that I wanted, which is a party without him, to do the nice thing. And that's going to be your arc for that episode or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then on this, it was kind of like, well, if the mom invited herself along to the daughter just wanted a getaway weekend, Lorelai, and then Emily like invites herself or something, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I don't really know who needed to learn. It was a little odd to me at the end. It was that Emily seemed to need to learn a lesson to loosen up. When it was kind of like at the beginning, Lorelai was the one who
was totally
wanted
at fault.
To like, she got this nice gift from her mom, but didn't want to spend any time with her and didn't need to kind of learn the lesson of whatever. Not like learning a lesson is the fun thing to watch on a TV show, but you know, like
I love lessons. I don't know what you're talking about.
I quit school, just kept staying home, watching TV.
But yeah, that she doesn't really like. In the end, it's like, oh, wait, the mom needed to loosen up? That was, I guess, I guess maybe they both do it. Maybe earlier, Lorelai realizes she was being mean and when she tries to take her mom out on the town or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
One thing this episode made me realize is that instead of having, like, an A story and a B story, I feel like sometimes they just try to have two A stories. And the fault with that is that when one is clearly the B story, they add another element to it to make it like, oh, isn't this more dramatic? With I think like the mom story would have been the B story here if it weren't for. So it starts off and it's like, oh, it's a problem. They're not getting along. And then there gets to a point where they're having a nice night when they're at the bar. And that if that was the end of it, that would have been the B story. But then they had to add the whole cheating on Richard thing. And then it's back to. Like, so it turns it from the problems with Lorelai to the problems with Emily. And I feel like it's so weird to have, because both those happen in the third act, so it's so weird for them to solve the problem and then immediately be like, oh, wait, new problem, and then try to fix that problem again. They do that a lot.
It's almost like a Simpsons thing.
Yeah.
Where the first act is always a mislead.
Right. But they do that a lot. And
but they do it for three acts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, maybe it's because I'm watching something that seems like a sitcom plot, but it's an hour show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's going, oh, yeah, well, on The Office, if you did a thing where it was like, you know, Jim has to go spend the weekend with Michael Scott and is trying to avoid him as much as he can, but Michael Scott rearranges the itinerary so they do everything together and... Eventually, and it's about like the comedy's coming from the person who's trying to get too involved with someone's life, and you gotta eventually go, okay, well, that person's gonna learn to back off or whatever. I don't know,
right. Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I guess that's like, yeah, that's a 22 minute plot, not a 44 minute plot. Yeah. So maybe it does sort of need to have like one more twist or something.
Yeah, we've really been trying to crack the nut of how they pace these shows. And even as a longtime watcher and viewer of the show, it's not clear to me how they do it.
I think they're getting better.
Like what their model is, you know?
I think they're getting better at it, though. There hasn't been an episode.
I'm not even saying it's a criticism.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, they shouldn't do it like this. I just like, I don't know what to compare it to.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's not like Buffy where there's that, like act breaks, act one. Like it's very clear.
Right. And it's funny, too, because I'm actually, if anything, I hate when you can just see a formula too clearly or when someone judges like, something based on whether or not it conformed to their idea of what story should be, mm-hmm. as opposed to did it just work? Like, that's
right.
So if anything, I'm like, hey, I'm glad to take something that doesn't follow like some set of rules that everyone thinks every story is supposed to follow. But yeah, there were times where I was just like also not sure what exactly was like, yeah, what I'm supposed to feel about each of the characters, I guess, with the mom, mm-hmm. With Lorelai and Emily especially.
Right.
I would love to open that up to like listeners, a lot of whom are smarter than me and you, Demi,
yep.
who have like sent in such thoughtful emails about like their thoughts about the relationships on the show and the plotting of the show. I would pose the question to listeners to email us, which you can do GilmoreGuysShow@gmail.com. Like, what do you think is the overall arc of the show when it comes to the relationship of Lorelai and Emily? Like, if it's a Venn diagram where it's like Emily needs to get to this place or Lorelai needs to get this to this place, or they need to do it together. Like, how would you articulate that as a viewer of the show?
Yeah. I think I was also probably just watching as like a dumb guy, like going, all right, you're going to tell me what the plot for this episode is. And the right away, okay, mom is trying to get involved in the daughter's life too much. I know where that goes from here, as opposed to like, you know, taking it as it comes. Like, mm-hmm. it's probably was smarter than me, but I was like, all right, give me just like the simple sitcom setup and I know what will happen. And
yeah, it's a weird hybrid because there's such sitcom-y elements on this show and then real weird cable drama elements on this show, like the ending of 20212, Richard and Stars Hollow.
Right, yeah.
Like how much of a bummer that ending was. It's such a funny mashup.
It goes all over the map. Some episodes are very sitcom-y, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not even like one episode has sitcom-y moments and then dramatic moments. It's either like very sitcom-y or you know from the beginning this is about to get dark.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, I'm saying the same thing you are, but like, I don't know how to describe this show.
It's nice. It's fun. It's fun to not know exactly what to expect episode to episode.
It's a comedy.
In terms
it's
of that,
drama. It's a comedy.
It's a crama.
It's a crama.
Barack Okrama. Couple last questions. Julia Schmedes, whatever. I love when I try to pronounce it and I just give up because the names are not important.
That's the way to do it.
She asks, am I the only one who wants Rory to be like a normal teenager and like want sex? She seems way too tame considering she is majorly into Frenching, which her and Dean were doing.
She is majorly into Frenching.
And she loves Frenching.
Is it weird to me that scene made me uncomfortable? Not in the sense that like, ew, PDA, but it seemed like they were just kind of like, it seemed like stage kissing more than like real.
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what Julianne said in one of the last episodes we did. It's like their lack of, it just seemed like, okay, we're the actors. We need a kiss now.
Right. It's like, okay, close your eyes. Just count to five or something.
Yeah, I didn't feel it.
So they're like, okay, now we can get to the dialogue where we talk about the kiss.
Yeah. La, 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 la. They're like practicing the dialogue in their head as they're kissing. But I don't see, obviously that's not Rory's character of wanting sex. And I think it's weird that Dean doesn't mention it ever. Although it seems like sometimes he's angling at it when he's like, your parents aren't home. How about I come over tonight? And then he's like, what? Why? To me, for the character, it makes sense that Rory doesn't want sex. But I think the show would be very different if she was into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fine that she isn't.
And then the last question for the room comes from @Norwegia Girl. And she asks, what would you guys do if left alone on a Friday night at Rory's age?
When I was Rory's age, I basically every Friday night, I was like, I'd get home and I'd be like, awesome. X-Files and Homicide are both on tonight. and then I'll watch those. Maybe I'll rent a movie. I'll watch Letterman and Conan. Like, I just would watch
TV.
X-Files, Homicide, Letterman, Conan. And you know, if it was reruns or something, maybe I'd rent a movie. I got a girlfriend like with like a month left of my senior year. For like a few weeks, I had a girlfriend, so I basically didn't like I didn't drink until I was in college. I really just kind of like stayed at home, or like my friends would come over and we'd watch a movie or something. Like that. Mm-hmm. Or if there was a new movie out, we'd go to a movie. But it was pretty much like, I watched those TV shows I loved, or I went out to a movie. And if I had no parents there, I don't think I even would have been like, oh, great. Let's try to
get
beers.
Game changer. Yeah.
For me, no parents at home means I'm watching TV in the living room. Like, that's really it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is this all, because that might have been my answer too.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was home alone and I remember I was watching in my parents' bedroom on their TV, The West Wing. It was one of the first times I ever watched it. So I was like 10 or 11 at the... Oh, no. I was 12 because I didn't actually start watching until I was 14. But I came home while... they came home while I was watching it.
Yeah.
And their level of... They weren't mad, but they were like, oh... It was like walking in on me doing something.
But you're watching The West Wing.
But it was The West Wing. I remember the episode. It was 100,000 Airplanes. Season 3, episode 12, I want to say. Could be wrong. I don't know.
Vivid memory.
I remember one time, and we'll get to it when we talk to it, but there was a Gilmore Girls episode. My dad walked in on me watching. He was like, what is this show about? Because there was some sort of sexual content, or at least they talked about it. Obviously, they didn't show it. It was the WB.
Right.
But we'll get to that when we talk about that episode later on in the season. So let's go around the horn and give our ratings for this episode. What we do is we rate the episode on a scale of 10. Mm-hmm. We give it a different rating per person. So you can say 6, 7 out of 10 somethings. So I'm going to say I enjoyed it. Really, my favorite part of the episode was Paris and her sweetness. And and when she – my favorite moment by far of the show – was when she smiled and looks down at the ground and then looks up at Roy and says, I'm not allowed to have mac and cheese.
I love mac and cheese. Great. I'm not allowed to have mac and cheese.
And she smiles. I was like, ooh. And then I almost cried when she covered for Rory. I don't know why, but that's my heart. And so I'm going to give it 7. 7 out of 10 Indian food delivery men. R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. I like this episode a lot, although I don't think it pulled any punches for me. I think that...
Pulled any punches?
Like, there wasn't... This isn't a standout episode. It's not a Bracebridge dinner.
But doesn't pull any punches mean, like, something different?
Right. I feel like pulling any punches is just like, oh, somebody died.
I'm saying the phrase... Correct me if I'm wrong, but like it didn't pull any punches as in like, oh, I had a conversation with the boss.
I think he's like, let you off easy.
Yeah.
He pulled his punches. He wasn't as mean as he could have been.
Right. So if you have a conversation with your superior and it's like, oh man, he didn't pull any punches. Like he was really harsh with you.
Okay. Yeah. I've been using that phrase wrong for years now.
Uh-oh.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is funny because if you didn't pull any punches, then yeah, he was extra harsh. Or he goes, he did pull his punch. Like, I feel like people do use it more as like, he didn't do... This phrase I would never otherwise use.
Right.
I guess. Yeah. Then, like, he pulled his punches in there. It doesn't seem to come up as often.
Okay. So I will say that this episode was pretty good. It didn't
pack a wallop.
Didn't pack a wallop.
Pack a wallop.
Didn't throw out any wild cards for me.
Pack a wallop.
Unless I'm using that wrong, too. But I loved the Paris story. Didn't change my mind about Jess. I'm going to keep giving that update to people because I think people keep expecting.
I think so.
I'm going to like Jess.
Yeah.
Didn't change my mind about Jess very much.
He reads Jane Austen, man. That means he's kind of sensitive.
I've read Jane Austen. I will say, though, this is one of the few times that I've seen him in a setting that I didn't hate him the entire time. Because the part where he's talking to Paris, even though it's not Paris falling in love with him, it's like Paris and Jess sort of cohabitating and like getting each other. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, part of me was like, wait, would I like Paris and Jess together? And I don't know if I would, but I thought about it. And I think Jess is better for Paris than for Rory, because I think Paris would change Jess more than Jess would change Paris.
That's true.
Anyway.
Because Rory's probably more impressionable.
I think so. I think very much so.
Actually, that might be a healthy relationship.
That's
Paris and Jess together.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because Paris wouldn't be as sad and lonely, which is awful to say. But she is. She's sad and alone. But
don't
also,
worry. Paris finds love in a hopeless place.
That's so good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
She'll always have Paris. I don't know. There's a joke there. I'll get it. Edit this so that the joke works.
Okay, so cut to us laughing right now.
How do I do it?
How do you?
So, yeah, 7 out of 10, good episode. Emily subplot, a bit lacking, I thought, but I still always enjoy when Emily's involved. So, 7 out of 10, Adulterers.
7 out of 10 adulterers.
Yeah.
Neil, we'll throw it to you.
Okay. Like I said, I really liked the Rory stuff. Mm-hmm. I also really liked, this is such a true thing that I don't see in TV shows a lot, of when there's someone who cares a lot for you, you can kind of just like, hey, I'm going to be alone, and they'll be like, okay. And it's sort of like, even that person who should be most important to me, like, they'll respect my wishes, so they won't do it. But then when there's people that you're not as close with and you want to be polite, then suddenly, like, you could get yourself in this situation. I one of the times I felt actual emotional was like when he was like, I'm coming over, and she's like, fuck, and she sort of knows, like, he, I just know I can say no to him,
mm-hmm.
but because of, like, just social
norms.
Norms. Yeah. I have to say yes to like being polite
because she hadn't done anything wrong up to that point. Yeah.
And now I'm in a position where it's like, well, the guy brought me a gift, so I let him in. She wanted tutoring. I said yes, and so I thought that was great.
On the phone to Dean, she should have just said Jess is here too.
Yeah.
That's all she had to say.
She tried to gamble. She tried to get him out too fast.
I know. The shock of seeing him at the doorstep clearly being pushed out for Dean was obviously like, I feel like if I just talk with you on the phone on the way over and you mentioned that one person's there, but you didn't mention that the guy that I'm already on edge about is not there, I'd be like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. Like, I understand Dean's frustration in the moment. All she had to say was, Jess is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... I loved that stuff, and the last shot I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And even as we've been talking about the Lorelai Emily story, I've been going, what was that story? Like, who was supposed to have done what? And I guess it did do a thing where it switched in a not bad way, in a nice way, where it starts and Lorelai's trying to, like, is getting irritated by her mom and eventually reaches a point, I think they're, like, getting the massages, right? And she sort of goes... She realizes I need to reach across and try to, like, make this fun and not just ignore her. So I need to – but it's funny that then her way of trying to make a connection is, you should do the things I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the episode becomes about that Emily won't do the things Lorelai like won't fully commit. But it's like Lorelai's compromise is, okay, fine, I'll talk to you if you do everything I want to do.
Mm,
which is sort of an interesting,
yeah.
like weird, but not like that's what people do.
Yeah,
essentially. So as I think about it more, I needed to talk it out.
Yeah.
That storyline.
Well, that's what this is for. This is
a little
confusing.
Like I said, I was watching, I was like, oh, there's the sitcom plot, but it isn't a sitcom. It's twice as long. Uh-huh. And so it does twist. And so now I'm going to give it. Overall, 8
Ooh.
Of 10 pieces of drywall falling from the ceiling.
That's perfect. Wow.
Perfect.
Is this the first time we've had a non-Gilly guest on where they gave the episode a higher rating than we did?
I was thinking that. I think it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congrats.
I was glad to see a new thing I hadn't seen before.
You know, people are going to love you for this. Because when we have people on who haven't seen the show, a lot of times...
They
say,
don't like it.
I hated it. But you know what? You came in with an open mind and an open heart. And for that, we can't thank you enough.
No, thank
open
you.
Mind, open heart. Can't thank you enough. That's the saying.
I probably,
can't
yeah.
Lose.
Maybe I'll retroactively change it if I watch another episode. I'm like, oh, wait, this one's filled yeah. with pathos and drama.
Yeah.
That's why.
That was more of a 6, you know?
Yeah. That's why I didn't give you the next episode. Yeah. all right. Let's, where we tweet, I will follow.
Ugh.
That's the segment. Plugs. What do you have to plug?
Comedy Bang Bang.
CBB.
Every Friday at 11.
On the IFC.
On IFC.
What does that stand for now?
It doesn't stand for anything now. It used to stand for the Independent Film Channel, but now it's just rebranded as IFC.
Oh.
It stands for IFC.
Oh, maybe we're saying it wrong. Maybe it's just a word.
Like IFC?
IFC.
Yeah.
So watch on IFC.
If every Friday at 11 and
right on.
I'm the head writer and executive producer on that. So tune in.
What is one of your favorite episodes that you got to do this year?
Of Bang Bang?
Mm-hmm.
Upcoming?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Upcoming, I'm in one a lot, the Joel McHale episode.
Okay.
So that was fun to trod the boards and act. There's an episode coming up with Zach Galifianakis that I think is just a really fun, different episode.
I love the Galifianakis episodes so much.
Yeah, he always does kind of our weird, different ones.
Because he's always game.
Yeah, and so he's coming up doing one that's pretty weird and different that I like a lot.
That's awesome. And you're on Twitter?
Twitter at KneelerDude.
At KneelerDude. And do you have a Simpsons episode coming up?
Well, as we're sitting here talking, yeah, I wrote a script for tonight's episode.
Oh, right no on. Way. Or for, yeah, yeah, okay, so Sunday. Okay, so by the time this comes out, go watch it on Hulu. What's the name
the
of the
Musk
episode?
Who Fell to Earth. I got hired as a freelance writer to write up like the first draft of
the Was that
episode.
Like the most awesome experience
Yeah, it was insane.
That's so great.
So cool.
That's awesome.
I got to write the first draft and turn it in, and then their writers and animators and everyone, and writers especially, like, then improve it mm-hmm. 1,000,000%. So if you watch it, it's not like I sat there and every great
and
joke
toiled.
Was me. It's like that but amazing staff.
To have your name on a Simpsons script is like, that's like a
yeah,
bucket
yeah,
list
yeah,
thing.
It was, exactly, yeah. Yeah. I was like happy to be any mm-hmm. small part of the process.
Yeah, and full disclosure, Neil and I met at a Simpsons live stream event that Ben Schwartz put on a couple months ago when yeah. they were doing every Simpsons ever
right.
on FXX. So to me, you're just the Simpsons guy.
That's, yeah, well, I do feel like it shaped my sense of humor more than anything.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally. There are those shows.
It's crazy influential for, I feel like, a lot of comedy writers. I know mm-hmm. Ben is a huge Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
I know Ali is a huge Simpsons fan.
Of course. And those are the two other people in comedy besides Neil.
Yeah, it's yep. you three.
Guys, for real, go watch the live stream because it is on YouTube. Just look up, like, Ben Schwartz, At Rejected Joe. I think it's on his website, the live stream, because Neil plays a character on it that is so good. Narf, the
bootlegger,
the
yeah.
bootleg artist. It is so good. It's so, so funny.
That was the hardest I've ever had to do, or the hardest I've had to commit to doing comedy at like 9 a.m.
That was the thing. That's exactly what I was going to say, is because the thing started at 9 or 10 in the morning, and you know, comedy, obviously, happens late at night or in clubs or in shows and theaters and stuff, and so to do it at 9 in the morning, you probably rolled out of bed like an hour or two before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like there's two other people in the room at that point. It was just, yeah, it was the best. So go watch that in honor of Narf. I am at Kevin T. Porter on Twitter, on Instagram, not on Vine. I'm starting to get Vine followers, but I don't Vine. I just need to delete it.
That's fine.
That's Vine?
That's Vine.
Okay. And what are you?
I'm at Barack Obama on Twitter, and I'm at Jason Sudeikis on Instagram, and you can find me at Justin Bieber on Vine. Or you can follow my alternate accounts, which is just at Electro Lemon on
Electro
anything.
Lemon,
come on! You were waiting for it! God! On everything.
It's gonna happen every time now.
I'm okay with that.
Follow the show at Gilmore Guys Show on Twitter, facebook.com/GilmoreGuysShow. And please write in to us, GilmoreGuysShow@gmail.com. We're starting to go through. My goal is to write back and respond to every single email. I've made a dent in it because everyone who's written in has like written all these like long, amazingly thought out, detailed emails. And we read all of them, but we're going to respond to all of them eventually. So if we haven't to yours yet, sorry, and it's coming. I promise.
And also, I just want to quickly say, a lot of you have come up to us or like recognized us in person and said very nice things about the show. And I want to thank you because that's the craziest thing and the kindest thing.
Did that happen to you this week?
Yes.
What happened?
A few times. Okay. I started UCB classes this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned the show in my class because we were doing our monologue. And I just start talking about the show, and someone went up for their monologue and was like, by the way, I just downloaded your podcast. And I was like, oh what? Shit. That's crazy. That's and then amazing. When I went to the bathroom to other people.
In the class?
Not in my class, uh-huh. but just also at UCB. And then last night, we went to a friend's birthday party, and someone there mentioned it to me after you left. And I was like, he was just here.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, there was a friend of the show, Patrick Walsh's birthday
party. It was. Happy birthday, Patty.
Happy birthday. Everyone tweeted Patrick Walsh this week. Happy birthday, Patty.
Yes. But yeah, thank you for all your very kind words. We're super psyched that you like the show, and thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to – well, we haven't even talked about this, but we're going to try to figure out a live call-in show.
Yeah.
Probably not next week, because next week's the Super Bowl. I know I mentioned something on Twitter and Facebook about that.
Right.
But maybe for the –
although it'd be pretty cool to have Katy Perry on it.
Yeah, because she'll be here taking
yeah,
calls
next week
all day. But maybe the 8th, we might do something. So stay tuned for that. We haven't finalized it because this comes out this Wednesday. So, right. So yeah, we'll figure it out and yeah, keep you posted on Twitter. How well do you know the theme song, Neil?
Of Gilmore Girls?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it once in my life.
Perfect. Here we go.
If you're out on the road,
singing Neil,
feeling lonely and so cold.
Burr, burr, burr.
All you have to do is call my name and I'll be there on the next train.
Choo-choo.
Where you lead, I will follow anywhere that you tell me to. If you need me to be with you, I will follow. Where you lead, I will follow.
Neil's breakdancing right now.
Anywhere that you tell me to. If you need
me
to be with you, I will follow.
Thank you, Neil Campbell, at Neil or Dude on Twitter.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks. Bye.
I like that song.